The practice of yoga has been around for a very long time, roughly 5,000 years, and you will surprise absolutely none of its current practitioners in mentioning that it's for the mind as well as the body. But the mind component may extend a bit further. Yoga is seen by a growing body of people as a possible tool in gaining and maintaining mental health. The proof is a book published this year called Yoga for Mental Health. It features writing by more than a dozen people interested in both mental health and yoga, and one of the writers, also a co-editor, lives in our region. That is Kelly Birch, co-editor with Heather Mason. She's here in the studio to talk about the complementary nature of yoga and mental health. Kelly, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you are, as I understand it, a board-certified counselor and been teaching yoga for a long time. Which came first?
Yoga teaching came first. I've been practicing for around 30 years and then teaching for around 15. And then in 2004, I started practicing as a yoga therapist.
So you moved directly into counseling from yoga then?
Yes. Yeah, I did a degree actually here at Southern Oregon University, a master's degree, graduated last year, and then I went into private practice in Ashland.
So are there some people who still resist the idea of putting the two together? I'm just curious to know how quickly this is growing and how much pushback you might be getting.
I wouldn't say pushback. I think sometimes people often think they can't do yoga because they associate it with what's been called modern postural yoga. There are millions and millions of people who practice yoga, mostly postural, some breathing. And a lot of people think, well, I can't do that. I can't stretch. I'm not flexible. I can't meditate. I can't do any of those things. And one of the reasons for writing this book was partly to explain to people there's a lot more to yoga than postures, which are fantastic and are really, really helpful for people for their mental and physical health. But there are many more aspects of yoga that everybody can do.
And I understand you and your co-editor, Heather Mason, met at a conference on mental health and yoga?
Yeah. Yes, in 2013, I think it was. And she's with the She's American and I'm English, so we sort of joke about cultural exchange there. And at that same conference, she was approached by the publisher who there's a lot of integration already happening, yoga, mental health, particularly clinicians who are interested in how yoga can help deepen the therapeutic process. And she thought it'd be really a good idea to write a book really looking into how are these two systems complementary, these two disciplines.
So yoga therapy and yoga teaching are not quite the same thing from the sounds of it. How do those, can you spread those out for us a bit?
Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, yoga teachers have somewhere between 200 and 500 hours of training, and they teach general classes. Some yoga teachers can specialize in some mental health issues, but generally speaking, it's broad-based. Yoga therapists, on the other hand, tend to have more in-depth training, in specific issues such as physical issues, but also particularly mental health. They'll have more training. The International Association of Yoga Therapists has standards that they set for the certification of yoga therapists, and mental health is included in there at a basic level of some things that are important to know for a yoga therapist. And they tend to work one-on-one or in small groups. And yoga therapists will do a lengthy intake form, an assessment that yoga teachers tend not to do. They may do, but tend not to.
Has that mental health component and certification been in there for very long? I'm just curious to know how long people have been thinking in terms of having conferences about yoga and mental health and that sort of thing.
I think the conference for yoga and mental health came about because Heather has a training institute for yoga therapy. I'm not really sure how to answer that question. I think to some degree, mental health has always been a part of yoga. I mean, initially, you mentioned 5,000 years ago. Well, 5,000 years ago, it was mostly about reducing mental suffering. The poses were not anywhere to be seen. And in fact, 15th century is about the first time they came into the texts, and the modern iteration of sort of more gymnastic-oriented, it was really in the last couple of hundred years. So mental health was always a foundation of yoga and is a natural fit then for a discipline that is also looking to reduce mental suffering and increase well-being.
Interesting. So the physical components of yoga that we most associate with, the downward dog and all the other mm-hmm. jokes about the poses and stuff, mm-hmm. are really a much more recent thing than the fact that the calming of the mind was always there.
Yes.
Kelly Birch is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the co-editor with Heather Mason of a book called Yoga for Mental Health, and there are a whole long list of contributors, more than a dozen in all. You can join us as we talk about yoga and mental health and how they complement one another. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. How is the book organized then? How is it, I mean, with all these different people you have coming together to take part, what did you do with it?
It's organized around diagnostic categories of the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, that is a classification handbook, as it were, for mental health disorders that's widely used by clinicians. And it's clustered around symptoms that are described as mental health disorders, such as anxiety, depression, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder. These are some of the things in the book. And even schizophrenia is in the book. Though the book does deal holistically with mental health issues, meaning it's multifactorial, biopsychosocial is a term used in mental health, actually, and physical health, the clusters are a way to orient clinicians and yoga therapists and anybody interested in how yoga can help them with a specific mental health condition. So there's each chapter begins with a clinical overview based on the categories in the DSM. There's then a rationale for why use yoga, how is yoga going to help. And then there are recommended practices, best practices, how to think about offering yoga to specific people with specific mental health conditions, and a future directions. Each chapter has what's needed in the future to further the integration of yoga and mental health.
Is the book primarily aimed then at the mental health professionals or the yoga therapy people, practitioners?
Both. Mm. It's aimed at the yoga therapists. You know, I go to this conference of the International Association of Yoga Therapists every year. I used to edit one of their publications. And increasingly, there are people saying, well, what should we know about somebody who comes into the yoga therapy setting with a trauma history, for example? And on the other hand, you have mental health clinicians saying, well, how can we use, you know, what is yoga? How can we use yoga in mental health? And there are some, they go into the book in very specific ways in which yoga therapy or yoga helps with the kind of things that get dysregulated in mental health conditions.
So I'm getting the sense that most of the move toward having a larger role in stabilizing and reaching mental health mm-hmm. in yoga coming from the yoga side less than from the mental health professionals who don't do yoga side. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that most often what I see in the mental health profession is interest in mindfulness and not necessarily specifically in yoga, partly because yoga is also seen as mainly postural. But as I was at the Psychotherapy Network, a conference every year in on the East Coast, I think it's Washington, They have somebody who wrote a chapter in the book, Amy Weintraub, teaches yoga skills for therapists. And it's always very well attended. And there's a lot of interest. And in fact, that's, you know, why this book was written.
Do the poses get in the way then? I mean, you mentioned a couple of times that a lot of people think of yoga as postural. And it sounds like that people think of that first and only in a lot of cases. And does that hinder somewhat the idea of impressing upon people the mindfulness aspects of it, which obviously seem to have an affinity, if not sharing DNA, with mental health practices?
Yes. I think often what happens when people are focusing on postural yoga and they practice postural yoga, they do feel the mental health benefits. Many, many people practice for a reduction of anxiety or perceived stress resilience, and have really wonderful results that may lead them to go deeper. Well, if this helps me, and they may tell their friends, if it gets in the way, I don't know. I mean, I mentioned before that a lot of people think they can't do yoga. So, yeah, it could. But it also can take people deeper into, well, this has really helped, and what more is there, perhaps? How about, you know, meditation, the guidelines, ethical guidelines for living your life more peacefully and harmoniously? People get interested in those.
They truly do. We're talking about yoga and mental health, and Kelly Birch is the co-editor with Heather Mason of a book called Yoga for Mental Health, with a number of different contributing authors putting together chapters or parts of chapters. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Your thoughts, if you are a practitioner of yoga, if it has really helped your mental health. If you can share a story with us, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you have some questions for Kelly, we'd love to hear from you as well. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, or you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. I'm curious to know about whether we're thinking in terms of yoga therapy as sort of an addition to existing therapies, or in some cases a substitute for. I mean, would you do this instead of something else, or in addition to other practices that are already underway?
Generally speaking, with the more challenging and severe mental health conditions, most of the authors in the book will recommend yoga as an adjunct. Either working as in collaboration with a mental health therapist, or a mental health therapist incorporating yoga. One of the things I wanted to mention is in many, if not all, mental health conditions mentioned, at least in this book, are characterized by dysregulation of the nervous system, typically chronic stress, chronically sympathetic nervous system, flight or fight, if you like. And not only can yoga practices such as poses, breathing, meditation calm the nervous system, they also teach us how to be more adaptive with the nervous system. The sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system work in coordination to regulate body systems and to increase our capacity, particularly for social engagement. That might surprise people about yoga, that when you calm the nervous system, it activates, try not to go into too much detail here, but the vagus nerves, according to polyvagal theory, are really essential to be able to engage what is called the social engagement system, enough relaxation to be able to look people in the eye, to talk with people, to have meaningful relationships. Isolation is a huge risk factor for mental health disorders and becoming more so. And this is one of the biggest a very significant contribution of yoga targeted specifically to mental health issues.
And I find myself thinking that if anybody's thinking, well, you know, we have things that take care of people. We have, you know, pills, for example, that can help keep the symptoms under control. But that's regulating the body in order to regulate mental health. So yoga is also about regulating the body to regulate mental health.
Yes, actually, that's yes. There are what are called top-down processes and bottom-up. So you can kind of go at it either way or both at the same time. The bottom-up is where you work with the body, with maybe a guided body-based meditation or postures, pranayama, breathing. And the body tells the mind, the thoughts, we're okay, we're safe, we can engage, we can handle life. And you can also engage what are sometimes called top-down, the prefrontal cortex, the executive control part of the brain that takes all these inputs from the body, the external world, and it can make informed decisions, and it can tell the body, actually, that was just a piece of rope. It wasn't a snake you saw there,
sure.
Right? And so they both work together, and yoga practices really help integrate the two. They actually, there's a fair amount of research showing that greater connectivity between brain functions is one of the things that yoga practices have to offer in mental health disorders. People with mental health conditions tend to have smaller prefrontal cortices, smaller or less activity in the executive control functions, and greater activity in the emotional centers of the brain, limbic system, the amygdala, the threat detection system.
What we refer to sometimes as the reptile brain,
the more primitive brain.
It's a response system based on emotions rather than, as you're pointing out, the executive function.
Yeah. Well, and we need emotions. Emotions give us they're there to give us information about the world. But when they're large and the executive control is smaller or less active, we can be driven by our emotions, and that's not always very helpful for us in our lives and in relationships in particular. And some studies suggest that long-term yoga practitioners have larger prefrontal cortices, less activation in the amygdala, and more connection between them.
The book is called Yoga for Mental Health. It is edited by Heather Mason and Kelly Birch. You're hearing Kelly Birch here in the studio on the Jefferson Exchange, and you're welcome to join the conversation. We'd like to hear your thoughts about what you're hearing, and perhaps if you are somebody who has received some benefits from yoga for your mental health or otherwise. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we mentioned there are chapters on depression, trauma, even schizophrenia, and I wonder if any of these show better results with yoga therapies than others?
That's a good question. It varies. I think the most commonly used application is probably in anxiety. And the research doesn't necessarily show more benefits in one area than others. What it shows is some of the ways in which yoga can be specifically tailored to particular mental health conditions. Say, for example, somebody who had anxiety, high anxiety, you might not want to put them in a restorative, pose where they're lying around without moving, because it's almost counterintuitive. You think, oh, if I have anxiety, I want to lie down, be still. But that can create space for the anxious rumination to occur. So you might want to do more active stretching poses first. Trauma is one of the areas that's had a fair amount of research. It's very complicated, so I'm trying to think.
I should point out to our listeners that you're trying to make sure you didn't jargonize this very much. I can see that the editing process
that's
going
exactly
on here.
That's exactly where my mind went. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Sure.
Yes, I was trying to say that one of the things that trauma, I was going to say that this chapter isn't just about PTSD. It also includes complex trauma, developmental trauma, not all necessarily in the DSM at all, but many of us in our life have had trauma, and for some people, the symptoms hang around a long time in the body. And the body becomes a place that doesn't feel safe to inhabit, and the thoughts don't feel safe. And a big contribution of yoga here is to allow a person or guide a person to be relaxed enough so that they can tolerate, we can start to tolerate difficult emotions and difficult thoughts, and connect the emotions in the body through increased what's called interoception, meaning awareness of the sensations of the body, what they're telling us about our emotions, what those emotions and sensations are telling us about our mind, and what our mind is interpreting, how our mind is interpreting those emotions and sensations. It slows people down enough so that they can start to say, this is how I'm feeling. And I can feel safe enough with this, typically with a guide, a therapist of some kind, I can feel safe enough to start to process these feelings that have been in my body, not necessarily integrated into what they call a coherent narrative. Mm-hmm. Memories can be fragmented and very scary. So yoga has a great contribution there.
And it sounds like a real opportunity to not quite sit back, but I don't know, sit up or something, and be aware of the things that you have been interpreting certain ways, and just be aware that you are interpreting them without placing judgment.
Exactly.
On them.
That's exactly right. And that's also, for example, very important in people with eating disorders. There's a spectrum of eating disorders, and they vary in their symptoms. But there's a lot of it's a similar characterization of not feeling safe in the body, kind of disavowing the body in a way, and losing the ability to interpret bodily sensations as helpful and as a source of wisdom and as a source even of well-being and joy. The body becomes something that's not a safe place to be. And again, yoga with good guidance from a therapist can be super helpful in integrating those again, so people can start to be in the body and be able to recognize and welcome thoughts. You said without judgment, that's really key. I have a lot of clients who judge themselves quite harshly for even having emotions or thoughts. And a big part of the healing, whichever discipline you're using, however you're integrating it, is to learn to accept emotions and thoughts as emotions and thoughts and not something bad about ourselves.
I was looking at your own credentials. We have to go in just a moment here, but you have experience in molecular biology, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
So you've really approached the human health from a number of different angles, haven't you?
Well, I went to school in my, I was about 33. I was going to go to medical school, and I studied biology and worked in research in the Bay Area for a while. And this has actually been really helpful in terms of being able to read research and have some idea of what it is and is not saying.
So any idea, just that we have a minute left here, number of therapists, is there a growing number of yoga therapists? Do you have a rough number for how many there are out there?
I should know that. There is a growing number and a number
of... you're having conferences now, so it seems like there's more than a few.
Oh, you know, that's a good point. There's around worldwide, at least certified by IAYT, there's two or 3,000. Mm-hmm. And worldwide, there's probably around 5,000 to 6,000 yoga therapists. And it's definitely a growing field.
All right. The information about what they've been learning through their practices available in the book Yoga for Mental Health, co-edited by Heather Mason and Kelly Birch. You've been talking to Kelly Birch. Or I've been talking to Kelly Birch, and you've been listening here in our studio here at the Jefferson Exchange. Kelly, thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much.